Thank you, Cleo. Okay. Well, good morning, everybody.
Is it still morning?
Yes, good morning, everyone. This is the fourth in a series of five. I'm a quite away family visiting. I'm a visitor. I'm a stranger. I haven't been here about how many? 3 weeks? 3 weeks? Yeah, something like that. Thanks, Chris. So I'm a bit of a stranger here, so it's a bit rude for me to welcome you. So I'm a stranger too. But here we are. And now what we've been doing over the last 3 weeks, and we'll do today and next Sunday, and that is look at this object here, which is, I think the door, it's here, hold on a second, here we are. The reason I've got this bag, by the way, is it's in honour of my father. He used to ride his horse into the bush to form Kenta, get his bulletin, and draw lots to the bank of the Nambucca River, and pick-saw them up with his father to replace the buffer rails on the side of sailing ships and steamships at the Nambucca River. So it's in honour of him that I decided that I'd bring along just a copy. This is what I'm looking for. This object here is vastly neglected, because in our society now is basically atheist, doesn't believe that God is there. Even if we fill out something on the census form, tick, yes, I'm a Christian, tick, I believe in God. Might as well not believe in God for all the use that we make of him. Never referred to him to make decisions, had no idea what he said. So what we're doing, and this book has seemed to be boring, and it seems to me that can't make sense. If God has made everything and then he speaks, he can't be boring. This is an interesting book. So the challenge is, find out why it's exciting. And what I've been doing the last 3 weeks, and we'll do today and next week, is to just pull out a couple of key things out of this book to show why it is exciting. Now, here we go. Called the Ecclesiastes. And let me see if I can find it. I know it's here somewhere. here we go. Ecclesiastes. Now, it's got to be one of the smallest books in the Bible. Here we are, pegged it. It's about 3 pages long in a library of books, 66 books. This is one of the smallest. It's a little book, but by God, it's saying some pretty big things. And to know the big things that it's saying, I think is really exciting and very useful to us. Next, we're going to look at one of the questions. This belongs to what is called the wisdom books in the Bible. There's 3 categories of books. There's history, and then there's secondly the interpretation of that history. And thirdly, there is the wisdom books, which really looks at questions that have nothing to do with history, and all human beings ask these questions and have to face up to these questions. So the question that Ecclesiastes asks is, how can we find out what life is about? That's a good question, isn't it? And if life has meaning, this is the task that this king set for himself. If life has meaning, can we read off that meaning by just looking at life as it presents itself to us? And just life under the sun. Okay, now life, for a Christian, for people who believe in God, life must have meaning. Clearly, God's not wasting his time. He knows what he's about, and life has meaning. So for a Christian, we know that life has meaning. Now, you don't have to believe in God to at least hope that life has meaning. And that's why we often do the things we do. We get married, we have kids, we build a house, we've got a job, we get money, etc. And why do we do that? Because we hope that life has meaning, and in the doing of those things, we will discover meaning. Okay, so whether you're a Christian or not, it's totally irrelevant as far as the exercise that this book carries on with. So here you go, there's a unique opportunity in a Christian church to now put God to one side. because we tend to go on and on about God, but let's put God to one side. But just keep in mind, for the Christian person, if God is there, life has meaning. And we're all in the business of trying to discover what that meaning is so we can live the good life and be satisfied with life and enjoy life to the fullest. Okay, now we're just going to look at life under the sun, is the technical term that Ecclesiastes uses. Just ignore God, look at life under the sun. Now, if you're into fancy words, it's looking at life empirically. That's what science is about, it's an empirical exercise. Space and time and mass, etc. Just look at life empirically. If you're into really fancy words, looking at life phenomenologically. It's taken all my life to actually pronounce that word. Phenomenologically, that is the phenomena of life. It's better for me, that's too complicated. I don't like complicated words. Life in all its rawness, life in the raw, as it presents itself to us each day. The challenge is, if there's meaning there, can we read off that meaning? Can we discover the purpose of life? Now, I'm going to use a little illustration here. I've got an object. Here it is. Single object. And the question is, what's the meaning of this object? What's the purpose of this object? Now, I've asked Roger to give me a hand here. I'm going to give it to Roger, and he can have a think about it and pass it to his wife and a few people around about here and see if they can work out the purpose or the meaning of that object. Okay, and he's looking for suggestions, I think. Okay. Now, I will come back to the object Roger in a little while. Okay. Now, the guy who wrote this book, as Karen, I don't think I need to preach this, sir. He did such a wonderful job. He was a king, and he's the one who's doing the research. Can we read off meaning in society? Now, he can do it thoroughly. Why can he do it thoroughly? Because he's a king. He's got all the power, all the money, and all the time in the world to do it. And he has brains. His son of David, we probably think it's Solomon, who's known as a wise character. Okay, so he's got brains, he's got time, money, and power. Okay. And so what he did was, he did things and observed what other people did in living life to examine what he's doing, think about what he's doing, think about what other people are doing, to try and work out, can we find out the meaning to life? That's a worthwhile thing to do. And I've done a bit of a rough count in this little book. This is his report, right up in his project. And there's at least 50 things he either does or looks at other people doing. That's a lot, isn't it? And in that 50 things is going to cover more than what any of us as individuals do. But his conclusion is, we can't discover meaning by just looking at life. We can't pick up the purpose of life just by looking at what we do. And that's the thing that Peter read out for us. Sorry, Peter. Mental block. Now, what did it say? Meaningless. Meaningless, meaningless, all is meaningless. Now in the Hebrew it says hayol. Everything is hayol. We try to work out what that means in English. The old translation was vanity, vanity, it's all vanity. But that's misleading. We don't use the word vain and vanity, what would have been originally as done. So meaningless, meaningless, all is meaningless. That's better. Are still not quite good enough, so I'm going to suggest something now. Peter, you might want to think about it, because I know you've been working on this book over last year. Unreadable meaning, all is unreadable. Probably the sense which the writer meant with table. Okay, and there's a weariness about life. The sun goes up and down, thanks again. Glad you, I hope your arm's not too achy. And the wind goes round and round, and the water cycle, and the water goes round and round. There's something boringly the same. And we seem to be not getting anywhere. When I go on holidays and I see people traveling down the way, they're going on holidays too, or just normally on a business day, they rush and rush and rush. And I say to myself, where are we rushing to? What are we going to achieve in the end? Okay, so same with generations. Generations come and go. I'm on my way out. This might be the last sermon I ever preach. Hugo is on his way in. But before too long, Hugo will be on his way out. When I was a young man in the 60s, a little bit older than Hugo, I came occasionally to this church. I think Bill Tapton was around there. Put hands up if you remember Bill Tapton. Oh, yes, a couple of actors, great. And I got to know a couple of here that I admired very much. Noel and Hazel Munton. Hands up if you remember them. Great couple. Now they're gone now. They're not with us anymore. Okay, now watch what this guy does. He looks at these 50 odd things, or at least 50 odd things. And I'm just going to share with you just a couple of them because they're very common to you and I. He looks at education. Will education give me the secret to life? University, whatever. And the answer is no, it can't. But all these things are valuable, and all these things have value, but they just can't tell us what the secret to life is, what the meaning of life is. This book hints at one of the tests for what would be the meaning of life, the true meaning of life. And that is, whatever it is, it has to be universal. It's got to be true for all people, everyone, everywhere, all of the time. And if it's not that, it can't be the true meaning of life. And that's why we know football can't be the meaning of life. Because it just keeps going, saying, well, let's get everyone to play football, then we'll discover the meaning of life. This just doesn't gel with us. Okay. And education is the same. And people who are not into sort of the academic stuff, what about practical knowledge? This is another thing this king looks at. What about practical knowledge? TAFE, with what they had them then. Apprenticeships, what they had them then. Well, perhaps they did. Learning by myself. But the problem is, even if you teach me, and I've loved doing this over here, stripping an engine down and putting it back together and having repairs, that's a lot of fun. But it's just not the meaning to life. And then if I can't do that, I should still be able to find out what the meaning to life is. It doesn't prevent me. What about getting a big house? Karen had the palatial, and you're right, Karen, it's the king's, it's got to be palatial. What about just getting a decent house? Well, that took me the meaning of life. And it's good to have a good house. But some people will never be able to afford a good house. Does that mean I'll never ever be able to discover the meaning of life? And the answer is, no, that can't be right either. Of course they can, even if they have to live in a tent out in the bush. Okay, making pots of money, that's our society, isn't it? We're pushed all the time, make money. But the problem is, some people are poor and will always be poor. So does that mean they are prohibited and not able to discover the meaning of life? No, that can't make sense. Okay, now, I'll cut this short a bit. He observes, and this is really important, he observes that we people who are trying to find what life is about do good things and we do bad things. Often good people lose out badly and bad people succeed. Just think of our modern version of that, scams. You think of all the innocent people that have had their life savings scammed off them, you know. And by the way, this is the useful thing about anonymity. If you can hide and take action, you can hide, no one knows who it is doing the action, it will reveal the state of the human heart. It will reveal if there's goodness here, it will reveal if there's badness here. And anyway, it goes on to say, well, we're all bad in here. But how do we know we're bad? Well, two things at least. We ignore God. And that's one of the rudest things you can do to any person, is ignore them and just be in fear. So how a person can say, I'm a good person, but I actually ignore God, can't be a good person. That's bad to do that. The second thing that we do that shows that we're bad is we often damage things. We damage things and we damage people and relationships. And we're all caught up in that. I have never been able to convince my friends I'm a perfectly good person. Haven't been able to convince my wife I'm a perfectly good husband. She's got the dirt on me. Just have a chat and that and do it and find it out. Okay. Now, God is not happy about the damage we do, but neither are we. So if somebody should threaten or to damage or harm Hugo, you and I know the reaction that Jeremy and Rachel are going to have. They are going to do whatever to prevent that happening. If it does happen, they're going to make sure that the person pays for the crime. Okay. Now, God is the same. I think it would be very weak of God if he's not against people who damage his world. I wouldn't want to know him if he's as weak and as gutless as that. He's got to do something, just like Jeremy and Rachel will do something. Okay, now why is he holding back? Why has he done it now? Well, it's to give us elbow room to wake up to ourselves. But he's not going to hold back forever. Okay, right, can we? We can't tell what life's about by just looking at it. And that's frustrating for them. It's there that we can't get it. That's why Peter, unreadable meaning. Meaningless says there's no meaning there. Unreadable meaning says meaning is there, but we can't get it. So that's why we've got that little twist on. Okay. But we Christians and non-Christians, we're all on the same jolly boat as far as this is concerned. Because let me put this to you. What is the difference between a world that's full of meaning, but you can't read the meaning, that it appears meaningless, and a world that really is meaningless? There's no difference in terms of our experience of it. It's exactly the same. So, okay, so how do we get around this? If the world really is meaningless, then that's going to be tough on all of us. We're wasting our time. And we'll do a few things that can sort of keep our spirits up, but really in the end, that's the end. There's nothing to it. All right. But if there's meaning there, and we can discover it, how are we going to discover it? Well, somebody has got to tell us. If God is there, he's got to tell us what meaning the meaning of life has. So, Roger, what conclusions have you got to with the meaning or first of that little life? What do you think?
I'd rather go on about the meaning of life. So, most of you have seen it. It's got a hook at the top and an offset right-angle loop at the bottom that's not closed. This one's only made of old heavy gauge fencing wire, so it's not a real commercial thing. So, you know, there's a sense of having a hook hang something. You don't tell me I'm wrong, and someone else can correct me also. Well, I'll give my impression, and the world can go on if you want a long message. But simply, we can advertise on the exit called Plum out of Mishlaning Sheep. You've got something very similar to this. You slide it out of the hook, yep. Out of the outer loop, and then you can hang to the hook.
That's where you go.
I doubt that you misread mice or rats, but that's the nearest I can see.
If I had a chucking fob, you could have. You're getting close. What you're doing is you're saying there are possibilities. There's all sorts of possibilities. But let's say you're right. Let's say it's for one of those bloodthirsty things we had. Or can't it, right? It can hook up this way, I think. Other way around. Hook on a hook. Okay. Well, if you're right, let's say Carrie's right, or Roger, you're right. How do you know you're right? You won't know. You won't know until the creator of it tells you. I'm going to tell you. You'll never guess what it is.
Can I?
You'll never guess what it is. I've got a wheelbarrow and the valve through which the air goes and pump up the tire is in a really awkward position. And so the only way I can do it is hook this around it, pull it tight so I can jam on the air hose so that I can pump the jolly thing up. That's its purpose. That's its meaning, if you like. Now, if that's true of a tiddly, wiggly little thing as this, how much more true is it when it comes to life itself? Only God, who created it, can tell us what it's about. So, I'm coming to the end of what I wanted to say. God has, who lives beyond the sun, behind this world, actually has told us just a couple of things, the meaning to a couple of things in our life. Not everything. Everything still is meaningless, or appears to be meaningless to us. He's told us the meaning to a couple of things. And that's why Peter read out the last bit. The sayings given by one shepherd, the Lord's my shepherd, that's God. Whatever God has said, you can hang your hat on this, because that's telling us what life is about. So, and he concludes really by saying, listen to him, get to know him, live your life by his word. Because there's a big court case coming up. And those that continue to destroy his word and to oppose him will have a lot to answer for. Okay, so his conclusion is there's meaning there, but you can't read it by just looking at it. So let's test that with the most significant event that's ever happened in human history, ever, the death of our Lord Jesus. Now let's go back 2,000 years and imagine ourselves in the crowd watching him be crucified. Here's the question. Can we work out the meaning of what's happening by just looking at it? Answer? No. You can't. There are plenty of people watching it, and they never clued what the significance of it. They couldn't. So how come one of the criminals executed with him found out the meaning of his death? Now, he's a criminal, by the way, guys. I know that in our lostness in our modern world, we blokes sometimes try and compensate and have some meaning for life by being tough and doing some bad things and boasting of it, etc. Well, it's all kindergarten stuff compared to this man. He's a criminal. Who knows? We don't know what the crimes were. Serial rapist, murderer. Who knows? But he's a criminal. And he knows he's weak, he's not strong. The one that's dying next to him is strong. How come he knows that this is the king of all kings? How come he knows that? Not by watching so much as by listening. Because Jesus said some things on the cross, and the criminal would have been part of the general society, and a lot of the things that Jesus said about who he was and what he's about was drifting through society. He would have heard that, he said. And he watched and heard what our Lord said and did on the cross. But that's how come he knew. So he says to Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus says, oh, I'm translating. This is so lovely. I'm translating. Well, friend, We can do more than this. Remember you, we can do more than that. Before the sun sets today, you'll be with him. And we'll have fun. Paradise. That's me. And that's what we need to do. Listen. Read. Turn back to him. Apologize him for all the mumble things we've done. Then we will be forgiven. God's got big shoulders. He's not a revengeful person. He wants people to come. And we can start off all over again with him and live for another. And be with him and his people forever. And start to taste now something of the fun that they will be now. Because Galatians says, doesn't it, Andrew? The fruit of the Spirit, the first fruit of the coming kingdom is love, joy, peace, kindness. You know, and they are strong and joy as in celebrate. C.S. Lewis, and I'll finish with this, C.S. Lewis was very worried about the Western world because we've become too saturnine, too warlike, angry, litigious. And he said, that's weak. Anger is a weak thing. What we need to be, he says, is be more jovial. That is, celebrating life under God. And he said, of all the people in the Western world that should be able to do that is the Christians. But they're often too saturnine. But they're sitting on a power kick. They can change everything if only they'll get to know their God better and rejoice in him and his goodness and not get distracted by all the foolish things that our current society's on there. So there we are. Football is not a universal truth. Bungee jumping for all the adrenaline hype it gives us, and that's fun to do. I'm not saying don't do it, do it if that's your thing. It just won't tell us the meaning of love. But the death of this man, this God, for us, to fix things up, is universally true. It's for all people, everywhere, all of the time. And that's the message of the book of Galatians. Ecclesiastes, sorry, Andrew. That's the message of the book of Ecclesiastes. Although the author wouldn't have been able to precisely focus on Jesus as the fulfillment of that. But in principle, he's got it right. God is telling us the meaning of things. Listen to what he's got to say. Live the life of God. And the future is yours. Is that lovely? Father, thank you for not leaving us in the dark. Thank you for speaking to us and giving us the clues to the main things. Help us, Lord, to be strong and aware and brave and to hear what you're saying and respond to us. In Jesus' name we say, yes, we say amen.